Welcome to the Draft Doctors Fantasy Footy Podcast with your hosts, John Crockett, Steve Fizz, and the Statesman.
G'day, everybody. Welcome to the new year and welcome to another edition of the Draft Doctors. I'm your host, Steve Fizz. You're all lucky listeners. John Crockett is still away on his honeymoon, but we've got a fantastic show for you anyway. We're talking our top 30 Dream Team ranks. This is going to cause a lot of discussion. Obviously, it's the new year. Ranking season's upon us. Despite Jono being away, I am joined by our fantastic co-host. Some people say he's got his fantasy footy skills by stealing a lock of Rusey's hair, whilst others say he got it from eating a salad dressed with Gary Ablett's mojo. He is the Statesman.
Hello, listeners. Welcome. Happy New Year. Can I say there's just something that just feels relaxing today. I feel comfortable. I feel smooth. It seemed like a professional introduction there. I don't know what's going on, Steve.
It just must be the new year. Everyone's feeling fresh and alert. Maybe it's just that sweet
Tassie. No one's pushing Motlop onto me.
Well, I'm sure the Essendon fans out there are very happy as well, because they're spared for a fortnight of being told how terrible their club is and how awful all their players are. And people have noticed that,
Yes. I have been watching the Twitter feed, and I think there was a few comments that mentioned time for Jono to move on.
Well, we do love the host with the most, but I can certainly understand him rubbing people the wrong way. Is that his go-to move? I feel sorry for the people of Vietnam at the moment where he currently is. But anyway, if you want to be one of those people who get stuck into Jono on social media, you can do so at the Draft Doctors on Twitter, or you can head over to Facebook where the Draft Doctors page is there, or you can send us an email at thedraftdoctors@gmail.com. And Statesman, how about your Twitter account where people can find you?
Yeah, at Statesman33, at Statesman33. So please feel free to ask any questions or throw some thoughts our way. We'll certainly respond and hopefully make sure that your draft team's looking pretty good.
Absolutely. And speaking of drafting teams, we've also got so many entries coming in for the Listener League. It's going to be a fantastic time. We've mentioned it over the last few shows. You can get us, we want something funny. Accepting applications in forms of memes. Tell us how good you are. Well, maybe don't tell us how good you are, but do something to impress us. Make us laugh. It's certainly a fun time. But we're talking about our 2017 Top 30 Dream Team show. And how we're going to work this is we're going to go off Statesman's list, being the doyen of all things Dream Team. And we're going to run through his top 30. And we're going to talk about where I've got my list a little bit differently. Some players he likes to break out. Maybe some guys to fall off the cliff. So why don't you tell us who you got in your top 10, buddy?
I certainly will. Now, the premise is that I looked at this in a few different ways. I ended up settling on, like an AFL club would do, I put my list of who I want. So the top 30 players who I want. Now, some of them might be picked up in the 80s. But this is the top 30 that I want, and my next pick, if they're available, this is the person I am picking next. So that's how I've set up this structure. Now, I believe over time we've effectively had the big four in fantasy footy, and make sure you realise that I always base most of my stuff on AFL fantasy, so that Dream Team scoring model, not the Super Coach model. And those big four have been Gary Ablett, Tommy Rockcliffe, Scott Pendlebury, and of course Dane Swan. Now, I believe this year was the start of a changing of the guard. In 2017, being our new season coming up, we're going to see them truly established. And I've got my top four right there and then, and the order that they should be in. And number one, I've decided to go Tom Rockcliffe. That shouldn't be a surprise with the level of scoring he is capable of. But I can understand why a lot of people would be nervous thinking about shopping himself around, the loss of the captaincy, all those type of discussions. But I reckon Tom Rockcliffe, with 1 year left on a contract, has a point to prove. And a new coach would love to give him the opportunity to show him the way. and I think he is going to have his best year of football. Whether that translates fully into best year of AFL fantasy is also questionable, because it depends on what the club's needs of him are. But I think he'll be the number one scoring. Yes, a bit of concern around him, but I think he should be expected to rise, because I think he's going to live up to that challenge. So I've got him at number one. Any questions from there, Steve?
No arguments from me. I've got Tom Rockliffe in at number one myself. I think the upside is phenomenal. And, you know, I hear the whispers, he's going to get a role change, he's going to spend more time forward. I think even if Tom Rockliffe spends some time forward, I think he's going to absolutely kill it.
Most of my comfort actually come with the discussion he had with Roy from the Traders. He actually went to that school and had a nice little chat in the car. And basically he was making it clear, look, I'm up for this challenge. And his belief is that 70 to 80% of his game time is going to be in the midfield. And yes, I will have a bit of a rest up forward. And I think that's actually perfect for his scoring. Number two I've got is the shackles are off Tom Mitchell. He's away from that dreaded coach. He's going into a midfield that need a change of face. They need some personnel, and Tommy Mitchell is the man when it talks about possessions. He's shown and proven scorer even in difficult roles, and I think he is capable of getting close to the 120. So my prediction is that Rockliffe would be 120 to 125, and I think Tom Mitchell would be 115 to 120.
That's as high as I could imagine seeing him on a list this pre-season. Just for listeners, I've got Tom Mitchell at number 7 on my list. It's just a bit of the unknown, and like you said, he absolutely has the potential to average 120, and that's absolutely fantastic. The thing is, for me, if you draft him at number 2... That value's built in. So you really can't be wrong at that point. You're obviously feeling pretty confident about Tom Mitchell.
Absolutely. Mind you, I will say that I've been waiting for this burst of energy to come from Tom Mitchell the past 2 or 3 years and been held back by the coach. He's no longer held back, so the shackles are off. But I feel very comfortable in Tom Mitchell's scoring ability.
Would you give him a green light, a yellow light, or... Well, obviously not a red light, but...
There's a orange light next to Rockliffe just in case he does the one thing that ticks off the coach. But I think that's unlikely. Tom Mitchell's just got a green light.
Yep. Okay, cool. Who's your number three?
Number three is Patrick Dangerfield. So he's part of the now new Big Four. Now, obviously, the top scorer last year with 118 average, 2,595 points. That's his breakout done. But I just want to raise what happens to Brownlow medalists. Now, if we go back the previous year, Nat Fyfe was a Brownlow medalist, 105 points. He averaged the next year at 98. Matt Prittis in 2014 was a Brownlow medalist. He averaged 108. The following year after the Brownlow, 103. Gary Ablett bucks the trend a little bit, went 114 and raised it to 119, but he also played 6 less games. So his actual total score was well below the previous year. In 2012, so let's not get political, let's count them all. Job Watson, 112 to 98, that's 14 points down. Sam Mitchell, 101 to 95, 6 points down. And Trett Conchon, 110 to 94, that's 16 points down. Looking back very quickly over a bit more history, it was only Gary Ablett and Dane Swan that bucked the trend a little bit. But they all played less games the following years than they did the Brownlow year. It actually makes sense when you think about it. Brownlow, you need to have an elite year. And this is one-off, massive elite year for Patrick Dangerfield. I think he's still, if he's injury-free, is going to continue to be in that top four. but I think what he says, I think he's more of a scorer between 110 and 115 rather than verging on the 120. In Supercoach, complete opposite. Obviously, he should be your number one player. Your thoughts, Steve?
Yeah, I've got Patrick Dangerfield in at two. I just feel he's really a safe pick, especially in terms of games played. Like, Patrick Dangerfield has a fantastic clean injury history. And I guess, like, what you're saying is interesting, because we look back at his career scoring averages, and this was certainly the outlier year, as you've seen in some Brownlow years. But one thing we can't predict is how much changing clubs affected that. And I think his ability to push forward and just be a dominant forward when he spends time there sort of saves him from those low scores. Much like your Tom Rockliffe, like when he goes forward, he's an incredible tackling presence and can hit the scoreboard as well. So I feel pretty comfortable about drafting number two. Yes, he might not average 118, but I think he's certainly capable of averaging 110 plus. And let's face it, he's going to win you some weeks off his own boot.
Okay, to round off what I believe is the big four is Lachie Neale. I think after Fife now is back, it doesn't hurt him. It actually helps him. And what I mean by that is that he's going to have a bit more freedom. There's going to be more attention and more space opened up because Nat Fife is around the place. He's one of those players, and this is what I like about Rockcliffe, Mitchell and Neale. They're not actually going to be the ones that drag the tag. Stephen Hill's obviously going to be first. Monday's going to be about. And although Fife's disposal doesn't hurt you, he is devastating. So Nat Fife becomes a target as well. Lachie Neale's going to be able to sit in that midfield and ply his trade. And he showed this year, because he had a little bit less support on the inside, that all of a sudden his handballs had to increase because Fife wasn't there. What you'll see is Lachie will combine his inside and outside play again, like his trend was previously, because he's got a bit more support around him. So he'll have more of the plus sixes. And 111 average this year, I can see that pushing up near the 115. And I believe this boy is here to stay.
Yeah, it's an interesting one. We know you're pretty keen on Lachie Neale. I've got him at 8 on my list. So pretty close. They're only 4 spots apart. We have seen the numbers over the last couple of seasons when he plays with Fife that the average is a little bit lower. Obviously, I really like him, really keen. He could improve, but we saw towards the end of the year he did get a few tags and the scores were affected. Obviously, this is a new thing for him, learning to deal with the tags. One thing, sometimes clubs just don't tag players, and maybe they do that with Fife and focus on Neale and shutting him down, but I still think he's a fantastic player. If they give him the tag, I think he can work through it a bit better this year, so I don't mind it. Obviously, pick 8 is still a first rounder.
His ceiling is average, I just think he's the type that's just going to keep on growing as he matures into the game. And if you average over 110 after you've been tagged in the second half of the season, compare that with the Jack Stevens, who only averages 104, he really gets devastated when you have a tag on him. So I'm quite comfortable where Lachie is and where he's heading. And quite comfortable for salary cap. 3 of those 4 are going to be automatic selections for me, Rockcliffe, Mitchell and Neale. And I just know that they're going to square away and make me, you know, 350 points plus each and every week.
Yeah, fair enough. Who have you got in at number 5?
Adam Treloar, so the new leader of Collingwood. And I brought up some interest. I picked up Treloar last year in the listeners league, and he's clearly now the number one at Collingwood. He is the midfielder there, an average of 111, and I think that's about the bar for him. I think he's, you know, the 110, 112 for the next 3 to 5 years. He will get some pressure because he's a quality player, quality deliverer. There's no doubts about that. I don't think we've seen how much he deals or how well he deals with the tag. But I suppose Penderbury is also a person that clubs want to shut down as well. So there's going to be that comparison. Is it Treloar? Is it Pendlebury? But Adam is a goal-kicking midfielder, and I think he's just under that next tier. He's not an uber premium. He's just that next lot, but he's going to be a very consistent performer for a long, long time.
Yeah, I've got Adam Treloar in at number three. Obviously, with the 111 average last year, he is the prime mover at Collingwood now. I think he's generally safe at the tag. Clubs will focus, like you said, on Pendles, and even Steel Sidebottom attracts it sometimes. I actually think he's got a little bit of upside. You mentioned his goal kicking. His conversion last year was actually really poor. So I think he can... Yeah, it was actually below 50%. So he's certainly got room to improve a few points, I think. And I think he's a safe bet to get 30 touches most weeks. Tackles well in the pressure-heavy Collingwood system. So I think his floor's really good as well.
Beautiful. And my next one is a love child. I picked him up at 44 in the Listener League. Luke Parker, 109.9 average, heading into his seventh season this year. This man is a gun. He's less likely to be tagged. He's an everything man. He can play in the guts. He can go deep and take a hanger and kick goals. Averages more than a goal a game in the past 2 years. And everything he does comes up with points. He tackles, he marks, he gets the hard ball, gets the outside ball, has a burst of pace, and he's got great strength and very durable. This man is an outstanding player. And rate Luke Parker extremely highly.
Yeah, Parker's great. We're a little bit different here. You've got him at 6. I've got him at 12. Last year was really the first, I guess you'd say, big Dream Team season he's had. So if you're on board with that, you've obviously got a fantastic bargain. There's just something about him that I love him. He's a fantastic player to watch. Like you mentioned, when he goes forward, he is like Dangerfield. He takes contested marks. He converts. He tackles well. He's fantastic, but just something about him says to me, I don't want to put the captain badge on him. I don't know why. I'd want him as my second midfielder, not my first, unless I'd shored up another position. That's just a personal gut thing.
Have you got Dan Hand in front of him?
Yeah, I do.
Okay, well, Dan Hand's 2 years older. Luke Parker, now going into his seventh season, has had 2 years, the last 2 years, with averages over 100, 103, then 109. At the seven-year season Dan Hamm went into, he had never broken the ton. So you look right through the history, and Luke Parker's always been better than Dan Hamm right through with scoring. And the difference with Dan Hamm and Luke, Dan Hamm's more likely, because of his outside run, to be tagged over Luke Parker.
I'm a big Dan Hand guy. I was on him the year he broke out. He's just done it. He's done it twice. So I feel a little bit safer there. There's something about, I don't know why, if you probably look at their histories, it's probably Dan Hand who's the guy that misses matches. But I just feel like Luke Parker is the guy who's just going to get concussed. I don't know why.
I think they're both as bad as each other, to be fair, in that space.
That's probably a fair point. I just want the guy who's averaged over 30 touches two seasons in a row over him. Look, and this is just a personal thing.
But see, those 2 seasons are 2 seasons more than Luke Parker's played football, is what I'm saying. So Luke Parker's still growing into his career. Dan's at his absolute max right now.
Yeah, the thing about Dan Hand was before the big year where he averaged it, he always had the massive ceiling. Always had it. It's just he produced 60s every other week. He's gotten more consistent. That's fine. We probably should move on. We're getting running a bit thin.
Yes. Next one is Zach Merritt, 117, massive breakout this year, last year, should I say. Look, he'd shown some real quality prior to, but never averaged over the ton. All of a sudden, 117 pops up. There's no doubt, I think, with the inclusion of quality players, Heppel and Watson, that his role will be a little bit more limited in the midfield, and therefore his scores will be impacted. 117 should really put him in the top four. But even if we were to drop 10 points per game for Zach Merritt, he would still be in the top 10 scorers for the year. So that's quite remarkable. There's a fair bit of room to wiggle here. The other bonus is if he does drop because he's getting pushed into the forward line, so it becomes that sort of half forward again, he'll actually change his status and become a forward mid. So I'm still quite keen on Zach Merritt. I think anyone that can average well and truly over that 110 and just hasn't appeared out of nowhere, he's been building up. I think he's an elite fantasy player. And this year, rarely got tagged, even though most of their gun midfielders weren't there. And that's because it's the same Lachie Neale, Tom Mitchell theory, was that Zacharakis is going to use the football better than Merritt.
The 117 sort of, wow, came from the suspension of everyone else for mine. They're back. I know Zach Merritt's a fantastic player. I've got no doubt he'll actually improve, but I don't see any way he maintains the numbers he put out. In 2015, when Job was playing, he was averaging 13 points less per game when Job was on the field. The marks went up 1.5 a game. I feel like either something... The thing is, he's an outside player, but he's a fantastic tackler, which is kind of a rarity, which you love. I think something has to come down, whether it's marks or tackles, which is points. I think his Supercoach scoring will still be fine because I think the quality of what he does is great. But just to me, I can't pick him at... Where have you got him? 7. I've got him at 21, so we're way apart on this. I just think there's other guys I'd certainly prefer. I could be completely wrong. That's fine.
Picked up by Jono at 48. What a great bargain. I think he'll be another bargain because people will be scared off like yourself. Quite happy to disagree over Zach. We'll just show this back on the We Are Stupid show.
That's fine. There's
one of us will be embarrassed.
Well, he'd probably finish at like 14 and we'll both be... Ah.
I'm expecting 108 from him.
Okay. I see it more in the 103 range, but that's perfectly fine. Who have you got next?
My next is Dan Han, 108.4, only 2 off his highest score. He's had the 3 seasons now over the ton, has a big ceiling, but tag target, unfortunately. It's just why I can't put him in that top 5.
Yeah, like you mentioned, the last 2 years, 110, 108, played the 22 games each time. Interesting thing, Statesman. And this might give you tags a little worry. His average dropped 2 points from 2015 to 2016, but the amount of hundreds he scored actually increased from 12 to 15. So he's become more consistent. He was always a bit of a boom-bust player, and he's really developed into a consistent player. He upped his contested ball quite significantly last year. So if he's at it, and you know Tom Mitchell's out, they're talking Isaac Heaney and Callum Mills up. They're certainly going to play on the wings. So I can see Dan Hannabury moving inside and certainly keeping those fantastic scores up. I've got him at number 4.
Yeah, now he's a quality player and he's can score points. He was picked up at number 9 at the Listener League last season. I've got him at 8. You've got him at 4. So he's a top 10 pick pretty clearly. JPK from Sydney Swans is next at number 9. Just very consistent. He was a little bit slower at the beginning of the year, but his run in the second half of the season was fantastic. Super coach, a little less in AFL fantasy, but still a star. That's why he should be in the top 10.
Yeah, I've got JPK at 5. So obviously I'm a little bit higher on him than you were. One thing they did over the first stretch of games was they were playing JPK quite a lot forward, which really isn't his go at all. So I think that sort of hurt his scoring a little bit. We see what he can do in the midfield, and he's a proven gun.
Yeah, and it's going to be interesting, that mix. Now Tom Mitchell is out of there. Not that he was a permanent midfielder, but I think that you'll find that Luke Parker will be and Isaac Heaney will be the 2 biggest gainers out of that. You never really taking Dan Hamm out of anywhere. He's got his spot. And at the end of the year, I think JPK was pretty settled in the gut. So I don't see Dan Hamm and JPK having improvement, but I certainly see it for Isaac Heaney and Luke Parker.
Yep.
To round out the top 10 is my first non-straight midfielder and new into the forward line this year. It was actually picked up at our listener league by Jono at 13. So I've only increased him with the addition of forward status to pick number 10. He's going into his fifth season of football. He's already averaged 104 twice in 2014 and 2015. That's Jack McRae.
Yeah, I've got Jack McRae at 9, so just one spot higher than you. Obviously, like you said, got forward status, averaged 104, 105 two seasons before. Pretty consistent player in a good team. And I think he's the safest of the forwards, so that's why I've got him as my first forward.
Absolutely, and he probably got in the top 10. And if we look who was picked at number 10 last year, was Dustin Martin. So that was the first forward picked up in last year's Listener's League. And Jack's basically replaced... Dusty is the number one forward to be picked, and I think it's about the right spot for him. I think if all things go well and he spends a bit of time on that wing, then 106 to 108 is possible, but more realistic, we're looking around the 105 mark for scoring for Jack McRae. My first defender is at number 11. Risky pick because the man has not played a full season of football. But he has the potential to score huge, and that's Taylor Adams from Collingwood. I think he's only in as a defender for 1 year, so we've got to make the best of that, despite being a risk. So Taylor Adams at number 11.
Yeah, I've got him at 14, and he's my second defender off the board, so we're not too far apart. The Butcher of Lully Street hasn't played a stack of games. Each season hasn't even registered 19, to my knowledge. So, yep, he could certainly average 110 and blow the doors off it if you pick him. But there's just a little bit of a risk. And I think I'm certainly comfortable with him as my first defender. It's just I'd like to get him as late as possible. He might not even get to me at 14.
And picked up at 29 in the Listener League last year and only being a mid, so... Adding that defender status obviously makes him more attractive. At number 12 is the first ruckman. After our discussion regarding rucks previously, my first thought is I probably wouldn't have a ruck, but if you have a ruckman that looks like he's going to stand out and be the number one ruckman at the club and not have too much competition whatsoever, not sharing the role, and can hit it big as this man can, averaging 106.5 in 2016, Max Gawn becomes hugely important because I think there's probably three or four ruckmen that are seriously can average over 90. And if you can get 15 to 20 points per game on the midfield, then you're in a good position for your team.
Yeah, I'm not as keen on Max Gawn as you are. I've got him down at 19. I don't see him separating himself from the second or even third or maybe even fourth ruckman taken off the board. So I don't think he's such an outlier that you have to draft him high. He's still capable of stinkers, which is bizarre. He's got a great baseline because of his amazing hit-out ability. He's not the same value in Dream Team as Supercoach. I am just pushing ruckman down my board in general this year. And I mean, we've seen it in years past that the number one ruckman has struggled to repeat over the last few years.
Absolutely. History says that. But I think sometimes that's injury or role. I think if this man stays injury free, he was in the top 10 scorers this year. And I think that's something we need to be mindful of. And if you can have a top 10 scorer sitting that only two or three other coaches got something that can be even close to comparing with you, I think that's something worthwhile. And I've only got two ruckmen in the top 30. And I think they're the right two ruckmen. And obviously, You've got to count probably Steph Martin as a bit of a smoky too, because if he plays the role on his own, then he's quite capable of scoring those heights too. But you might be able to pick him up as a bargain. Next off, and I wish I didn't have him on the list. He wasn't even on my list originally until you pointed out, Steve. Thank you. But then I fixed it and then I regretted it. But that's the way he plays. It's boom or bust. Jack Stevens averaged 104 in 2016. 3 years ago, he was the number one scorer in the country. But one thing I promise, if you pick him up at pick 13, I hope there's only 12 players on in your league, because therefore he's your second pick and you don't have to put that C on him.
Yeah, that's where I've got him. I got him at 16, so we're obviously thinking along the same lines. Certainly don't want him as my first midfielder. Yes, he can give you 150, but he's when he gets a tag. Look, the thing about him is you can generally tell when he's going to get a tag. So he's a little bit different, but yeah, I certainly don't want him as my number one midfielder.
But he might also develop out of that as well. He might be able to learn from it and actually become better. And as the team grows with him, maybe they give him more protection as well. So he might, and we've seen it with Dan Hannabury. You talked about the tag affecting him and going from 12 to 15 tons. Maybe Jack can do the same.
Maybe. I want to see it first.
Ditto. Number 14 is Rory Sloane, and I avoided him like the plague this year, and so did most of the coach. The Listener League, he was picked up at 45. Jack Stevens at 6, and Rory Sloane at 45. Well, Rory Sloane outscored him by 1.5 points per match on his average. I was quite surprised. He won't be a top tenner, but quality all the same, and just rolled into the season, got better and better as the season went.
Yeah, Rory Sloane's an interesting one. I've got him 26, so a full round behind. 106 is his real first big. It's not really a big average. I mean, it's good average, but it's not huge. He's only gone over 95 in Dream Team twice. His tackles went up 1.5 to 7.3, which is just elite for tackling. Disposals went up to 25 without danger. So he's not really a big possession winner. It's everything else that he contributes that helps. The tags came later in the year for Rory Sloane, which blows me away that they didn't go to him straight off the bat, because the midfield is it's particularly thin for a fantastic team. I'm not comfortable with him as you are. I don't want him as my first or second midfielder, which probably means I won't get him.
Yes, you could be right. So number 15 is a guy I'm very, very high on, and that's Marcus Bontempelli. He's a top tenner, clearly. After that little excursion up the forward line, he popped back in the midfield and averaged 109.9 from there on in. That's top 10 material. So you're going to get him, pick him up a little bit later in second round of the draft. That is an absolute gift. And to be quite blunt, when my pick comes along, Jack Stevens, Rory Sloane and Marcus Bontempelli there, I know I can probably get Bontempelli later, but I'll be ending up picking Bontempelli. I think this man's a gent, and if he plays in the midfield all year, expect to see the first time him average a ton, and it'll be 110.
Yeah, I've got no problems with the pick. We've actually got him ranked in the same spot at number 15.
Absolutely. Number 16 is Nat Fyfe. There's big upside here, but it comes with some risk. But as they keep on telling us, he's fit as a fiddle and started training quite early. His highest is only 105.6, but I expect that was part of that slow build, and I think between 105 and 108 is quite capable for Nat Fyfe. I don't think he's in Lachie Neale's potential when it comes to AFL fantasy scoring, but Supercoach might be a different matter. But Nat Fyfe at number 16.
I've got him two spots lower at 18, obviously like Nat Fyfe. Isn't known as a Dream Team scorer, but of his five games last year, three of them were over 120 in the format, so he's certainly got the potential there. The injury history concerns me, and that's why he's at number 18.
Yeah, picked number 7 in the Listeners League last year and 16 and 18 from us. So he has dropped a little bit, and that's obviously the risk coming with it. And first time in probably 5 years this man hasn't been in the first round, and certainly my calculations, is Dustin Martin. 107.1, which was an outstanding year and his best average scoring year. But he drops the furthest away because now he's mid-only. Otherwise, he would be a top 10. Caddy Prestia, the question is, could he get that Ford eligibility back? If it is, it probably does put him in the top 10. Went off at 10 last year's Listeners League. I've got him at 17 as a mid-only.
Yeah, I'm a little bit lower on Dustin Martin. I got him at 25. I think that forward time will come. We're starting to see the articles come out just before Christmas where Lepich is saying he will be spending time forward. Dustin Martin himself has said he likes playing forward more. So I've got his average dropping back. Now, if you're playing in a league that does have dual position changes, then I actually think where, Statesman, you have Dustin Martin is spot on, because if you pick him at 10, you've built in that value. If he plays forward, his average is probably going to come back to more your 102 sort of numbers, which is what he's been in the past. I like Dustin Martin. He plays 20 games every single year. Where I've got him, if you're not playing position changes, I like at 25, but if you are playing position changes, I think your 17 is pretty bang on the money, to be honest. Because, I mean, let's be honest, it takes 6 rounds to even get a position change.
Absolutely. Number 18, now this man I picked up in the Listeners League draft last year is my first round draft pick at number 4. It's not the player. I think he's an absolute gun. I'm just concerned of what type of role he's going to play for his club, and that's Dependlebury, Scott Pendlebury. Number 2 at the club now, and he's a risk for defender slant forward shared roles. It could be an upside that he actually gets a role change, but I'm unsure that'll happen. I think he'll just be sort of missed a fix-it and not be set in any part of the ground. He'll just go where Collingwood need the help. It's a very, very important year for this club, and they'll use Pendlebury the best way possible and lead the club where it needs to be led, whether that's defence, forward or midfield.
Yeah, we're obviously miles apart on this one because I've got Scott Pendlebury at number 6. Plays 22 games every single year. His first month was slow. Obviously playing the defensive quarterbacking type role. Allegedly, he had busted ribs or something. Hurt his ankle at the end of the season. Still managed to knock out 13 tons out of his 22 games. His smart plays average was down slightly. Maybe he is slowing down. But he certainly toned up enough to suggest he's not. The kick-to-handball ratio surprisingly slipped, which was interesting. His marks and goals were down a little bit. But, like you said, it's a pivotal year for Collingwood. I think he will play in the midfield because that is where he is the best, and he makes everyone else better.
I look at balls down. I put him in a position of where he scored this year, and I've got a fear of what they're going to do with him. I don't think with the strong midfield, and as Champion Data rated them the number one midfield in the competition, that they will use him where the club needs him, and that's where I've got the little fear. I've always had him as part of that big four. I don't think he's there now. And in other words, I've got him this low because if I've got pick 8 and Luke Parker, Zach Merritt and Dan Hand are there, I'm confident I know what they're going to do and I'll pick him. Number 19, Sam Doherty. And it was me that picked him up last year at a great bargain at number 64 in the draft. Average 101 as a defender. And I feel very confident he's got his breakout done. This is what he's going to give you, solid as a rock defender. He doesn't have the highs and lows of a Heath Shaw. He just delivers, gives you between the 70 and 120 week in, week out. Very, very strong defender and will score for you each and every week.
Well, when you talk about him like that, why isn't he at number 10 like I've got him? He's rated.
I've taken the punt with Taylor Adams, who I think has got a higher ceiling.
Well, that's fair enough. I've got him rated as my number one defender. He scores well irrespective of role. when he's in the plus one role, he's fantastic, hitting heights of 134. Only had two games under 20 disposals, which for a defender is pretty phenomenal. Aside from Adams, I think he has the least question marks over his average. And when I say that, I mean your Cade Simpson, your Heath Shaw, these types of guys. But without the risk of missing games. Look, maybe that's me projecting that he doesn't have a bigger risk of missing games as Taylor Adams, but that's just my opinion. Only got one Dream Team ton in the first six games, so from round seven on was averaging 105. He's a developing player. Sky's the limit for Sam Doherty, and I certainly feel very comfortable choosing him as a position player in the first round.
Yeah, quite comfortable too. Number 20, I call him the defensive Jack Stevens, and we all know why. And I, even in salary cap, I didn't pick him up to the last five rounds, and he done the Heath Shaw thing, gave us absolutely zero. So, look, he's there in case he's the only good defender left in that sort of second round. They're pretty thin on the ground, so it probably is the reason why he rates so high, but he can give you 160.
He certainly can. I agree he's in that second tier, but I'd have Cade Simpson and even your boy Rory Laird in front of him. It's the first time he's averaged over 96. He's been a fantastic player. If teams want to beat GWS, tagging Heath Shaw went a long way to achieving that. He had a floor of 42. Oof, that is horrific. When tagged, doesn't get all those freewheeling marks, and disposals went down as a result. 31 heading into the year, so obviously I'm not sure why you've got him on your list, because that's past the threshold, surely. Look, he can win you a week, but he can lose you a week in the others. I don't have him in my top 30.
Yeah, I'm regretting having him in there, but that's okay. It's one of those that I'm almost foolish of not having a defender that can get you over 150. I think he sort of needs to be there. He's going to win you a game. Or two or three. So in a draft perspective, he's certainly worthwhile having. 21 is still side bottom, definitely in the number three. He's got huge potential. He's got a high ceiling, but sometimes a lowish floor. I don't think he's ever going to be that elite, 110 plus, but he is a good scorer. And as your second midfielder, I don't think you should be too annoyed.
No, I've got him at 22, so obviously just one spot apart there. Yeah, like you said, I like side bottom, but I don't want him as my number one or two. I like him as the reinforcements, I guess you'd say, to your number one and two.
And the next spot, 22, is Joel Selwood, 102.6 average last year. His last 2 years have been well below when he was closer to the elite, when we're talking the top six or seven midfielders. I've certainly been burnt before. Danger has helped, and he can score, and can score big, but obviously he gets a fair bit of pressure sometimes as well. So Joel Selwood at number 22, again, as your second midfielder, again, you're not going to be too upset.
Yeah, I've got Joel Selwood at 13, so obviously I'm quite a bit higher on him than Statesman. Yes, he's a second midfielder, not a first, but I think we saw the really down year when there was no other good player next to him. The year before, he had Stevie J burning it up in the midfield. Obviously, the years before that with the Cats' fantastic midfield. You bring Patrick Dangerfield into the side, lo and behold, Joel Selwood's fit and firing again. I've got no problems with him at 13.
Yeah, the next three players for me have all got a bit of risk about them. But the reward is quite large too if it works out. And the first one is Gary Ablett. He needs to be on this list just because of his history, but I don't think he would have ever slipped even for a 10-man league outside the second round before at pick 23. Last 2 years have effectively been a write-off, averaging 99 and 20 games combined, 6 and then 14 over the last 2 years. You need to be a buyer beware, but you can be rewarded huge. We know he's averaged just under 120 previously. He's been one of the Jets of Dream Team. Will we ever see it again? I'm unsure, but it is maybe worth the punt in that third round.
Yeah, I'm a little bit higher. I've got him at 17. I've got him in the basket of your Jack Stevens, your Nat Fifes, the players where there's a little bit of risk, or they can give you dud weeks. I certainly don't want him to rely on him. But when he plays, he's absolutely a fantastic captain option. It's just how often he's going to play, Statesman.
No, absolutely. You're spot on. And the next one is Brett Delidio. I'm very high on him this year, but I think you can get him as a bit of a bargain because he's had two injury seasons. He has a very high ceiling. He's never played in a top two club. That's the great reward that might come out of this. And I believe that he'll go over 100 points. He'll probably be one of the two forwards that do so. So Jack McRae, I think, has got a bit more consistency. And then I think Brett Delidio will be your number two forward for 2017. So I got him at 24.
Yeah, I thought it was interesting you had him this low. I've got him at 29 as opposed to your 24. So obviously I like him as well. The difference is on your list, he's your second forward. On my list, he's my fourth. I'm putting a little bit of emphasis on making sure I try to get one of these guys who are going to finish, or forwards who are capable of averaging 95 plus.
Yeah, I sort of had a look at forwards because I think there's a limit to the top-end premium forwards, but there's a lot of mid-range candidates if you're talking salary cap. So when it becomes draft, your Jack Steele's going to be quite attractive and potential to be the 80 to 95 scorer. So I think there's a lot of them in there. So I either get one of the elites or I fill up with the those breakout contenders.
Yeah, while I'm putting a premium on getting one of these top guys, even Buddy, I guess, is a candidate, is I look at the next tier and it's fully of Stevie Motlops, Devin Smiths, who are all fine players and, yes, could push up, but there's so many question marks, and if you pick the wrong one, I think people are going to really reach on these guys, even, I guess, Josh Caddy. You probably feel a little bit better about him than some of the others, but I think that people are going to spend a second and third round pick chasing these forwards, and I think it's going to burn them in a pretty big way when you're sitting there picking up guys like your Michael Barlows and your and these other players. So I think that's where you're going to... I think you're going to get value on their bad picks.
Yeah, it's a fair point, but don't ever hesitate on lunch meat, mate. It's quite worthwhile. the next cab off the rank, Michael Barlow. Some huge upside here. We know he's capable of the 110. Picked up at 17 last year by yours truly as a forward, so that was a pick that burnt me. But Michael Barlow... he's got a great opportunity. I think he's got the first half of the season to show his wares. If he's performing well, he's in the midfield for the year. But I reckon there's a lot of midfield candidates in that Gold Coast list. So it's going to be very interesting to how that develops. That's why I'm a little bit lower. I think his potential is just outside the top 10. But I'll just be mindful that Gold Coast have recovered really well in the trade and draft. And they've got a lot of players.
I actually thought I'd be higher on Michael Barlow than you. I've got him at 27, so we're only a couple spots apart. I actually think Michael Barlow is a sneaky candidate to be... He could be the number one point scorer, let's be honest, if we're talking about what his ceiling is. Thank Christ he's away from Ross Lyon. He's as fit as a fiddle. He's won his time trial. This is a game he had last year. He tagged Robbie Gray to 19 disposals whilst he had 43 of his own, 8 tackles, 3 goals. On his way to 159 Dream Team points. I think he was dropped. He was dropped 2 weeks later, basically, because he won the game off his own boot. He's had averages of 109 and 110 in the past, regularly busts 130. He gets to play next to Gary Ablett. I think he's a point-scoring machine. I'm all about Michael Barlow.
Now, this is an embarrassing story at number 26, because I picked him up at last year's Listen to the League at 124, and after round one, I delisted him and put him on the waiver wire. He went on after being selected at round two to average 103.4, Stephen Coniglio. Not sexy, but the man can score.
Yeah, I'm all about Steve Coniglio. I've got him decently higher than you at pick 20. Fifth-year breakout, roles and still scored. Yeah, he played various roles and still scored. He did move from tagging to being more the inside-outside midfielder. 21 games last year, 13 tons. Man, that is fantastic. The team, we both feel the team should be in the top two or three at the very least. He's the highest scoring piece of the GWS midfield. He's gone past Callan Ward. Dylan Scheel is, I guess it could be Dylan Scheel, but I'm not. He's just in and out of games. Steve Coniglio is the consistent piece. 28 disposals last year, 6 tackles. That's fantastic. 11 goals. He's in his prime. He's trending up. The difference is you've got guys like Jordan Lewis, Brett Deledio, Zach Merritt in front of him. I'm all about Steve Coniglio this year. I'd certainly like him as my third midfielder, but if he's my second, I'm okay.
And just to confirm, I delisted him after round one last year.
There you go. Even the statesman occasionally has to eat some humble pie.
I'm too embarrassed to search who I picked up just in case it's your delisted James Aish.
Oh, wouldn't that be serendipitous?
Yes. At 27 is my second ruckman. Had a fantastic end to last year. Again, one of these players didn't play round one because Jared Witts did. That's Brody Grundy. Averaged 100.9, I think, close to 110 for the second half of the season. He was picked up at 149 at last year's listeners league. 149, that's quite incredible. Brody Grundy is definitely, with Jarrett Witts gone, the number one ruckman. Unless he's injured, he is the main man and playing every game.
Do you know where I picked Brody Grundy up in our league of record? Waivers.
No.
Yep. And you don't need to draft a ruckman. Look, I don't have Brody Grundy on my list, but he's certainly a fine pick. We're obviously getting into the guys where we're quite a bit different. If he was your second ruckman, I got no problem with it. But just the third round's a little bit rich for me at this stage.
Now, I will say my last three, and I'll rattle through them very, very quickly. I'll just list the names. But these are the people that I'm looking for a breakout year from. So they're the ones I'm taking a punt on. Now, these guys I've picked ahead of Gibbs, Heppel, Laird, Zorko, Simpson, Goldstein, Jordan Lewis, and Nick Riewoldt, who was the number one forward by a long way last year. It's that ageist theory. He's one injury from career being over. I just think it's unfortunately a time that Riewoldt won't be part of the next premiership, so at any stage, it's not working out. I just don't see him there. So I'll let someone else take the risk. And yes, he scored 200 against me in the Listener League's grand final last year. So his last game of footy was 200 Dream Team points. But these are the three breakout players that I've picked, and they're all midfielders: Ollie Wines, Patrick Cripps, and a big punt on Dion Prestia.
Well, they're pretty interesting players. Of those three, I certainly like. Obviously, like Ollie Wines, I had him on the pump-up show, hype show, the early hype train. I had Ollie Wines, so I'm obviously all about that. Cripps is fantastic. And Prestia's an interesting one. Maybe just give us a quick insight onto Prestia.
Yeah, so Meatball, I just think he's ready for the breakout. He's played enough footy to show in a very young list and without the sort of true midfield support, with the exception of Gary Ablett when they've played alongside each other, that he can win his own ball and he can get outside and get some space as well. So he's got all the makings for a big Dream Team scorer, and he's been averaging around just under 100. I think 99 was his highest year, but he's just at that age where he's ready to take the next step. So if the preseason works well for him, we know he's had some injury concerns, I think it'll all fall into place because Richmond have got the hardened bodies around. They've got an exceptional midfield now, and I think he'll just be part of the rotation. I think Cochin will probably keep the tag position. So Martin and Cochin will be the two that they try to look after if they're in the midfield. And I think Meatball will get away with that and have an absolute ball.
Well, that's a really interesting pick, and certainly one everyone can jump on probably at some stage in their own drafts. Obviously, there was a few players I had on my list that you didn't have on yours. We'll just burn through them pretty quickly. Number 11, I had Nick Riewoldt, the aforementioned old man last year, average 110. People mentioned the 200 and how that affected his average. What they won't mention is the three games that were quite poor. One, round one, he started forward, didn't do too well. The game against Collingwood, where he didn't play after half time, he was on 71 points.
And
the other game, they were smashing Collingwood. They didn't need to risk him. And the other game, he got a knock in the game and still played it out. Four games under 95, 14 tons. He was the best forward last year by a dozen points, playing the roaming, marking, midfielding. They call it the Richo role, which I think is pretty strange. But anyway, that's what they've called it. He excelled in it. If he's playing the same way, I don't see why he doesn't average over 10 marks and 20 disposals. Like you said, the risk is maybe he just falls off a cliff and gets injured. Interestingly enough, they call it the Richo role. The second year Richo tried to play it, round six, gone for the year. So that risk is there, but you're talking about a guy who can average 10 points more than the next forward.
If you put everything on rankings and what and trends and what they should be, he should be around that 8 to 12 mark in this. But that's why I quantify right from the start. This is who I'm going to select if given the opportunity and that player's available at my next pick. And unfortunately, I'll be avoiding Nick Rewal because of the risk factor.
Yeah, so he was my second forward, so that's absolutely fair. At number 23, and looking at this ranking, I actually should put him at about 17, and that's Luke Dalhouse. Wasn't even on your list, Statesman.
No.
Played the 17 games last year at 92. He did play a match where he got injured in the first quarter, and he'd already had 8 touches and kicked a goal, so he was on 32 points. You lose that. I know we can pick and choose games, but you lose that game and his average repeats at 97 from the year before. 21 or more disposals the 3 seasons before. 21 games or more, sorry, the 3 seasons prior. So he's got a pretty good games history. Tackles, disposals, goals are all very good. I don't think there's any question marks. And I don't see the way in which he misses finishing in the top 5 forwards unless he gets injured, which we presume helps.
Oh, no, I agree with all of that, but I think I can pick up Josh Caddy at round 8. Who's going to average the same as him. And as we talked about when I won the argument with regards to Delidio versus Dalhouse, I remember that argument very well, Steve. But that discussion was all based around saying that Dalhouse has got his limit. He's where he's at. He's not going to get full-time midfield role. He's always going to be that sort of half-forward, forward pocket, and he's going to average between 90 and 98.
Well, he's done 97 the last 2 years. Well, obviously with the asterisks last year. I just like him and I feel very safe with him. You mentioned you can get Josh Caddy in round 8. Man, imagine having Josh Caddy and Luke Dalhouse in your team.
Yeah, but I obviously want to take that risk with the Michael Barlow scoring me 110 to 115. And that's where it comes to. And I'm going, well, who do I want? Do I want a Dalhouse who's going to give me a 95 or do I want to take a risk with a Barlow who could potentially give me 115? So that's where I got it. And on the background, I go, well, I take Barlow here and then I get Josh Caddy, who's going to deliver me a ton average as well. 3 rounds later, I think that's where I go.
Okay. Well, that's perfectly fine. Number 24, I've got Jack Viney. I think he's the heart and soul of Melbourne's midfield, average 101 last year. Obviously, just slipped outside your rankings.
Did. He was in there first draft. Just sort of dropped away, and that's when I just looked at the breakouts. I think he's done his breakout. I think he's around that sort of max limit now, and I think as the quality comes through, they've got some CP, you've got Bradshaw. They're going to start affecting the time and rotation through there, so I think they've leaned on him as much as they're going to. So his time in the middle, although it's not going to stop, it just might reduce a little bit. So I'm thinking he's around the ton scorer.
Yep. 28, I've got Andrew Gaff, average 93 last year, well down from the year before. Obviously last year he was tracking pretty well, but suffered the concussion and the scores dropped off for about a month before he roared back to form and started pumping out 130s. Yes, he's a tag candidate, but for some reason, since 2013, they've kind of moved away from that. I think he bounces back with the inside presence of Sam Mitchell and they feed him the pill on the outside. And his teammate at 30, Matt Prittis, who just seems to be able to knock out 103 every year. I know Sam Mitchell's there, but Matt Prittis finds a way to get his.
Yeah, I'm not fans or big fans of either. I think Andrew Gaff's highest ever average was 104. He's now played 7 years of footy. He's not, by any stretch of the imagination, an elite scorer. I wouldn't mind picking him up as my third midfielder, but certainly not my one or two.
Well, 28's that third range.
Yeah, but I would have had a forward defender or a ruckman in as well, so he wouldn't be my second midfielder.
Okay, fair enough. And Pritis at 30, so there you go. That's our top 30s.
Yes, I mean, obviously there were slight differences, but I think they were pretty close to each other. I think there was one major difference in Scott Pendlebury, and that's obviously my nerves in regards to his roles more than anything else.
Yeah, that was interesting. And Riewoldt, I guess, was the other massive difference.
Yeah, and probably the ruck. So they're the three things. Sorry, I started off with one, but we ended up with three, which is, you're right, Pendlebury, the rucks, and Riewoldt.
Well, and I've prioritised forwards maybe a little bit more than you as well. That's four. I'm sure we could find five if we really tried.
Yeah, I'm sure.
But anyway, that wraps up our top 30 rankings. You can certainly start to think about making your own draft list. We will be doing our position-by-position rankings starting in a couple of weeks. Next week, we've got our top 30 Supercoach show. So obviously, Statesman, you'll be all at sea there, which will be interesting. But when we talk about the rankings, we can certainly talk about tiering a little bit more, which is obviously fantastically important. Keep those entries coming in for the Listener League. It's been a bit of a long show, so we'll catch you off there and have a good day.
Thank you for listening to another episode of the Draft Doctors Podcast. Don't forget to subscribe and review.